Who's Talking with DZ Martin is brought to you by Crook's Corner, home of Shrimp and Grits, and Bill Smith's Season to the South menu. Join us at 610 West Franklin. Daily menu at crookscorner.com.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin. It's a special event. This is Elizabeth Spencer Week in Chapel Hill. In fact, Elizabeth Spencer Week all over the country as we celebrate the upcoming broadcast of the Light in the Piazza on live from Lincoln Center on PBS. It'll be on UNC TV at 8 o'clock on this Sunday. And we're here to celebrate it live from Crook's Corner. We're going to be sampling some of Bill Smith's great food, and we're going to be talking with Elizabeth Spencer, who's joined us here. If you're close by, come join us. There's a little bit of room here for you to come and visit with us. We're also going to talk to Bill Smith about some of his great food. In fact, he's got a special treat that he's given us. It's a champagne cocktail made with rose petals, and I hope we don't have too many of them. We're also joined by Morton Neal. Later on, Morton and Bill will be talking about how Crook's Corner developed and sharing some of the recipes from the two books that each of them has written a book about the recipes at Crook's Corner. And we're also right now going to talk to Shannon Ravenel and Elizabeth Spencer. First of all, Elizabeth, welcome. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for helping us celebrate this great occasion of the broadcast.
Thanks for asking me. Looking forward to seeing once again what they do at Lincoln Center.
Well, Elizabeth, as the Broadway production or the New York production of Light in the Piazza is in some respects a long way from about the late 1950s and the 1960s when you first wrote this story. Have you learned something about your story as you've watched other people tinker with it and make a great musical out of it?
Well, they had to have changes, of course, but I think the people who developed it were really devoted to the story, and they've kept the heart of the story, I think, pretty much intact. There were some scenes that were different in the book when I wrote it, but they couldn't bring all of those on the stage, and I think they treated it very respectfully and brilliantly in some cases. Two bright guys like that who are at the top of their profession. I was lucky that they were the ones that found it and wanted to do it.
Well, Elizabeth, you've written, Shannon would just have to say, numerous short stories.
Yes.
And
novels.
And 9, 10, 11?
I think it's 9 novels.
Novels, so that your career didn't end with the publication of The Light in the Piazza, first in the New Yorker, and then as a novella?
Oh, I had published 3 novels before that. They were mainly laid in Mississippi, where I grew up, and I didn't know anything about writing about anything else until I went to Italy and lived there 5 years, and then it seemed to me, in a story like that, it was a way to bring the South and Italy together.
And it did, indeed. It's wonderful.
One is somewhat combating the other. One is merging with the other, and that's what sort of interested me about doing.
You know, Shannon Ravenel, you and I have been talking about the internationalization of Southern literature a little bit, and when we come right down to it, maybe one of the very first of the modern internationalists who brought the South.
DG, you're completely right. I hadn't thought of it, but that's really true. What was the year that The Light in the Piazza was published in book form, Elizabeth?
1960. It had come out earlier that year in the New Yorker, and it was quite
successful.
Right, I read it successful.
In the New Yorker, I remember.
But there were a few bits I left out when I shaped the story as, a novella, really, but for magazine publication, and I just stuck them back in. So it was a little bit longer when it came out as a separate
You foiled
novel.
The New Yorker editors.
Not really. They, you're shaping one for one thing and one for the other.
Right.
But there wasn't any basic changes were not present when the book came out.
Elizabeth and Shannon, for those who are just tuned us in, we're broadcasting live from Crook's Corner at the border of Chapel Hill and Carrboro. We're having such a good time. We're going to be sampling some of Bill Smith's great food creations and drink creations. We're drinking a rose petal champagne cocktail that was created just, we'll call it the Elizabeth Spencer because it was created just for her and just for today. Elizabeth, I read, I think it was the first non-required fiction reading maybe that I'd ever done, but I came back from Europe in 1960, and first thing opened up the New Yorker. I had been traveling with some people from Winston-Salem. I'd been to the Piazza. I'd been in Italy, and I opened it up and started reading, and I have to confess that the thing that drew me to it was the North Carolina connection, the Europe that I'd just seen. And then now I read it every so often, and I pick up all these rich themes that I didn't catch the first time. But tell me about the North Carolina connection. Was I misled?
Well, I had been writing about novels and stories set in Mississippi, but when it got to bringing a Southerner abroad, which I always do because I feel more at home with Southern characters than I do with people from just anywhere and North Dakota, no, California, no. But anyway, I thought about making them from Mississippi, but people in Mississippi had this habit of saying, oh, I know just who you mean, even though it wouldn't be anybody you met. Now, Shannon is a very fine publisher, and she knows that syndrome over
that
and
I
over.
I sure do. If you write about home, everybody at home thinks you're writing about them
right? Even though you may not remember them or have them in mind at all. Anyway, when I was in Italy myself in those years in the 50s, I noticed that the thing that went around the most was American cigarettes. They didn't like Italian cigarettes or French cigarettes. Galois, and there was some awful brand of cigarettes in Italy. But if you had a pack of Camels and Lucky Strikes and all that, but it was just a good thing to pass around.
I remember for my trip, you could bargain with the shopkeepers
so
and
I
you
thought,
could get
well,
a lot better
thing
deal.
The thing to make her is the wife of a cigarette. Man who was in a cigarette company, because that would immediately open doors and be recognizable. So that's what I did, aside the fact that I don't think I'd been to Winston-Salem. Maybe I had, but I sort of liked the idea.
That's really interesting. The other interest, or one of the many interesting things about The Light in the Piazza, is the question of what is it? And Shannon, you're the expert on Southern short fiction.
Is it
a short story? Is it a novella? Is it a novel?
Well, it's not a short story, I don't think. Do you, Elizabeth?
No,
I think
it's a novella.
It's a novella, and a novella is something, just all it means is it's a little less long than a short novel. So 50,000, I don't know how many words are in The Light in the Piazza, but the usual thing is 50,000 words mm-hmm. or under is a novella, and 50,000 and over is a novel, and that's all it is. It's just
Saturn would be expert on that, and I'm not. I just judging by the length. And
but I mean, lots of very short things are published as a novel, but a novella I don't think has any particular characterization as a genre except its length, don't you?
Mm,
so it's a novella, and is it published? Isn't it? Wasn't it first published with some stories, or was
no?
It, by
it was
itself?
Published separately.
By itself. Well, then they probably called it a novel.
They did, but, you know, it was a very short novel. Now they can't afford to do that because it's, the printing expense and the binding and everything.
Yeah.
And so they put other stories with it usually, but I have some other stories I wrote that are set in Italy that it's easy to link together.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Shannon, what's the future of short fiction, like the novella and the short stories?
You know, it goes in kind of waves, and I don't know whether I'm just overly optimistic. The short stories had kind of a downtime recently. Fiction as a whole has had kind of a troubled time in the last decade. But sitting at my desk the other day thinking to myself, I think maybe the short story is coming back up in people's, you know, minds, and it's being reviewed. Collections are being reviewed much more than they used to be, or they were a decade ago. And the New York Times is beginning to review collections of short stories on a regular basis. So I think the short story, it'll never die. But I think, I've been working with short stories since 1960 myself and have seen them rise and fall. It was very good in the 80s, not so great in the 90s. And I think they're coming back.
Well,
Shannon's completely up on all this, and I'm listening with great interest.
Just making a guess, too, but I just have this feeling that short stories are, you know, you're still writing them, Elizabeth, and placing them easily, I'm sure, aren't you?
Well, I haven't written very much recently, but I do. I'm proud that
a couple of years ago.
Yeah, you were very good to me. You picked it up for your stories from the South. Uh-huh. I was pleased about that.
I was pleased to have it.
Well, we're talking with Shannon Ravenel, and we're honoring Elizabeth Spencer during Elizabeth Spencer Week in Chapel Hill because we're looking forward to the upcoming broadcast on UNC-TV of The Light in the Piazza, the New York musical based on Elizabeth Spencer's novella, The Light in the Piazza. And right now we're going to take a quick break. We're going to have a sample some of Bill Smith's great creations. But you stay with us. We'll be right back.
In the game of life, your credit score can make all the difference in the world.
The Smith family is going for a home loan. The referees are reviewing their credit score.
Wouldn't you like to know your credit score before you apply for credit? Now you can. Log on to freecreditreport.com and get your credit score and credit report online for free.
Upon further review, the loan is approved.
Get your free credit report and score with enrollment and triple advantage at freecreditreport.com. That's freecreditreport.com.
Criminal justice is one of America's fastest-growing career fields. With a degree in criminal justice, you can pursue exciting entry-level opportunities. At the ITT Tech School of Criminal Justice, they teach you the fundamentals of the criminal justice system. Classes meet just a few days a week, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Call now for an ITT Tech brochure. 1-800-851-4499. 1-800-851-4499.
Not offered at every campus. Check the ITT Tech for a list of programs offered.
We've all heard the wireless phone ads. Can you hear me now? Well, how about inside? Are you one of millions who lose your wireless signal once you go in your home or office? That can change now thanks to Signal Boosters.
As long as you can make a call outside your home or office, Signal Boosters can get that outside signal inside.
Having to go outside to use your wireless phone means you're missing a lot of calls, or they're going to your voicemail, which can not only cost you money, but precious time in the case of an emergency. Signal Boosters will improve your reception as long as there's adequate signal outside. From small spaces to large warehouses, Signal Boosters gets that outside signal inside. This is the wireless age, and 75% of Americans rely on wireless phones for voice and data connectivity.
Business owners, if your customers are missing important calls or have to go outside your establishment to talk, they may not come back. Can you afford that? If you need better wireless reception inside, remember, signalboostersnc.com. That's signalboostersnc.com.
Performance Auto Mall is rewriting the book on car buying and ownership.
I think when customers walk into a car dealership, they've got great fear about the buying process. They got fear about being taken advantage of. They got fear about not being told the truth.
That's Gerald Ramoyne, Vice President and General Manager, explaining why the performance promise is revolutionary in the auto industry.
You want to make sure that when a customer experiences the dealership, that they get a chance to feel important, they feel special, they feel like they're part of something, a relationship. Because we know for a fact that we need the customer more than they need us.
If this sounds like the way you'd like to acquire your next Acura, BMW, Chevrolet, Porsche, Subaru, or certified pre-owned vehicle, then come see us on the web at performanceautomall.com or in our showroom, convenient to most anywhere, just 12 minutes west of the airport, exit 270 off I-40.
Don't take my word on it. I'm just one guy. We have 200 passionate team members that personally invite you in to experience the performance promise for yourself.
Who's Talking with D.G. Martin is brought to you by Crook's Corner, home of shrimp and grits, and Bill Smith's Seasoned in the South menu. Join us at 610 West Franklin. Daily menu at crookscorner.com.
Well, thank you so much, Ron Stutson. Speaking of Crook's Corner, we are here. It is live at Crook's Corner. Who's Talking and Crook's Corner in partnership to celebrate. This is Elizabeth Spencer Week. We're celebrating the upcoming broadcast on UNC-TV this Sunday evening of The Light in the Piazza. And, Elizabeth, during the break, you were telling us that the cast is nervous and excited about this.
Oh, I didn't talk to all of them, but I know they want it to go well, of course. But if you do see theater people very often, you notice they are always walking a fine line and hoping to do well, and they carry on. That's part of the ambience. but to be on TV with it. And you can't go back and play a scene and say, oh, you did this wrong, let's do this.
It's not going to be
cut.
It's
got to be it.
It's going to be done as it was done.
But it's
got to
be it every night in live performance, so I know they'll do well.
Well, there'll be no tomorrow. They have to do this.
That's
this is the way it'll be.
One thing they worry about is whether they will have a sore throat or something. They just live hoping to keep their voices clear and strong.
Well,
I found that out.
Well, we are excited about seeing this wonderful production based on your novella, The Light in the Piazza. We're joined now by Morton Neal, and as we are at Crook's Corner, Morton is also a native of the same region, same region that you came from. There's a big Mississippi contention here, but you all have been in North Carolina, so we claim you both as North Carolinians.
Thanks.
But, Morton, I thought you would maybe help us understand when you talk about Southern writing, you talk about Elizabeth Spencer's writing and others, and you know food. Does the way we eat have an influence, you think, on the way we write?
Well, it must. It must be putting something in Mississippi in the food that makes people want to write, that's for sure, because there's so many writers down there.
Well, did you both? I mean,
must be something.
Did you find out when you came that is it Southern eating, or was Mississippi and Louisiana, New Orleans, were they a little bit backward compared to your...
Oh, yeah. That's the secret of the writing. There's not that much to do, so you write.
Mm-hmm.
And sip bourbon, you know, that was Walker Percy's secret.
A little drinking.
It wasn't what he ate, it was what he drank.
Well, Elizabeth, you not only experienced the differences in eating from Mississippi and Louisiana, but also in Italy, and part of that setting must have had some sort of impact on the way you looked at things.
I don't know if it did. I really just loved Italian food from the time I got there. And I know that it isn't all spaghetti and tomato sauce. It's just a wonderful variety of food in Italy, don't you think?
Oh, yes.
But we used to go from Mississippi and our regular fried chicken and roast chicken on Sunday and all that. We would go to New Orleans to taste some real French New Orleans food that isn't Cajun food. It's the development that the French and European had on restaurants like Antoine's and Galatoire's. And so we had always a good list of restaurants that we wanted to visit when we went to New Orleans. The list might vary, but it only varied in the sense that one would be first and another second and third, and then sometime you'd put third up to first. But we always had just about the same names on that list. And it grieved me so when New Orleans was hit so badly, because I thought about the restaurants. I think that's a bad confession, because one should be people that God.
I share that thought.
I'm visiting.
I know, and slap our faces.
Oh, well, you should.
But a lot of them didn't really survive. I mean, the old classic
ones did. I think they did.
You all helped me with this. I visited with Lloyd Kramer the other day, and his conversation will be broadcast tomorrow on Who's Talking. Talking about the difference, the views of people in other parts of the world about America and the differences that they see. One of those differences that he picked up on in a seminar a few weeks ago is that Europeans think that Americans are just, and not just recently, are fast food people, that they do not enjoy their meals. They do not sit and relax and eat over a long period of time, whereas Europeans are perfectly happy to have a 3-hour long meal where they talk and discuss and visit.
Elizabeth pointed that out in Light in the Piazza. I just read it this afternoon. And she was talking about the husband, mm-hmm. who was from Winston-Salem, the husband, the father of Clara. Mm-hmm. And she said he absolutely will have no tolerance for the Italians, because he is a brass tacks kind of guy, and he doesn't understand...
I could waste so much
slowly
time.
Slowly enjoying life and spending so much time over an aperitif for several courses for a meal or anything. I mean, of course, I'm
people talk about that mainly, though, from the standpoint of lunch. We don't waste much time for lunch. That's true. You know, you say let's have a bite. But I don't think it's so true about dinner. Most people.
Well, there are a lot of people here.
Civilized time over dinner is a regular thing.
Yeah, but Elizabeth, when you and I were growing up, dinner was at lunch.
Dinner was at lunch, that's right.
Dinner was lunch. There was no lunch.
Turn it around.
Well, we're going to be talking to Bill Smith in just a few minutes, the chef at Crook's Corner, and he tells the story about being down in New Bern at his grandmother's house at dinner every day in the middle of the day. She would gather his family around and serve dinner. We don't do that anymore, though, do we? We don't serve dinner in the middle of the day.
No, it's considered a waste of time now.
Well, Elizabeth, what else about food and eating crept into your stories, or is that something that just doesn't spice up life for your characters?
That's funny you're mentioning that. I had somebody looking through my stories to find different things people had and found quite a lot of references to all sorts of meals, cooked up in the course of the action and everything. Yeah, it's a typical Southern menu of fresh vegetables from the garden and, game. And my father was a hunter, and he used to bring home quail and dove and squirrel and venison. Do you have recipes for venison? You must.
Well, in my repertoire, yes, yeah, but in my book, no, I didn't use anything. But, yeah, we ate a lot of, that was a big thing when I was growing up, too. We had wild duck for Thanksgiving
every
year.
Wild duck, yeah, yeah.
Mm. And hunting was a huge recreation down there, and it still is. When I go down to visit my friends in Mississippi, their husbands, not the women, but the men, are still out there.
My father sort of semi-retired. My mother said he lived from one season to the next. If it wasn't quail hunting, it was dove hunting. It was squirrel hunting. It was deer season. And if they couldn't do anything else, they went fishing.
Well, then, people shot squirrels and pigeons that were sort of considered pests around the house. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather had a rule, you had to eat everything that you killed. So we would regularly eat pigeon or a squirrel.
Well, this is all
raccoon, I guess. No, we didn't eat possum.
We didn't eat possum.
No possum.
And we didn't eat coon. That was off the list. Possum was way too fat, as I heard it.
We're going to have to move towards a break because I've got to get Bill Smith over here to rescue us and talk.
I want to tell the rose petal story.
Tell us the rose.
About Bill Smith and the rose petals.
No. Tell us the story.
Do we have time?
Yeah, we'll take it. We'll hold up the break.
When we got here, as you know, we were served this delicious cocktail, which is now called the Elizabeth Spencer, but it was called rose petal champagne or something before. Andrea Leach, who a lot of people listening will know, who used to do the flowers at the end, she is the most exquisite floral designer in the South. Her son took a job with the Shah of Dubai, or whoever he is, the Prince of Dubai. She went to visit him. She brought back dried rose petals, a huge bag of dried rose petals, and she gave them to me when I went to visit her to bring to Bill Smith because she knew that he would do something wonderful. I was down there to do a talk on edible flowers. And so she thought I might have a clue what to do with them. Well, I didn't, and I passed them on to Bill as she expected me to. And this is what he came up with, cocktail.
Well, let's take a break, and I tell you what, Morton, we'll let you and Bill Smith talk about the cocktail and about some other food items. We'll let Elizabeth take a breath. She'll come back later on. We're going to take a short break. We're at Crook's Corner. Come join us. We're having a great time. We'll be right back.
The Chapel Hill Restaurant Group invites you to join us in a celebration of local farmers. Squids, Spankies, and 411 West are now featuring the freshest locally grown vegetables and herbs on their menus. Tender summer squash, beets, and cucumbers from Eco Farms and Elysian Fields. Vine-ripened strawberries, tomatoes, and greens from Rose Lion and Bill Dow. Sugar snap peas, blueberries, cucumbers, new potatoes, and corn. All grown locally by your friends and neighbors. Come join us and enjoy the bounty of our local harvest at Squids, Spankies, and 411 West.
What has your boss done for you lately? If you can't answer that question, then you should know about Carolina Cosmetic Medical Spa's Beautiful Skin is In corporate program. Your company can now provide employees with an array of benefits for beautiful skin. It's very easy to enroll, and there's no cost to your employer to participate. Carolina Cosmetics' Beautiful Skin is In corporate program is an excellent extension to your employee benefits package, offering discounts on state-of-the-art medical cosmetic procedures from Botox to laser hair removal. In addition, each month, Beautiful Skin is In members can access the Carolina Cosmetic website for additional Beautiful Skin is In offers. The program also includes great ways for employers to reward their executives and other employees. To participate in this terrific corporate program, call Emily at 493-3194. That's 493-3194. Or go to the website, carolinacosmetic.com. Carolina Cosmetic Medical Spa, a division of Central Dermatology Center, present the best image for your company with Beautiful Skin from Carolina Cosmetic, where beautiful skin is their specialty.
Hey, Tim. Man, you look exhausted. Long night?
To say the least, I had a bad dream. I took my clothes to one of those bargain cleaners. My pants were wrinkled, and they lost my favorite cobalt blue shirt. You know the one my mom bought me.
No.
Tim.
No.
Tim, relax. It was just a dream. And besides, you take your clothes to Plaza Dry Cleaners, and you know Brenda takes care of your clothes.
You're right. I do.
This is Brenda Dye Honeycutt. At Plaza Dry Cleaners, trust that your clothes will receive the best in dry cleaning service. And with our Green Earth cleaning solvent, your clothes are not only cleaned, but cleaned with a solvent that will not harm your clothes or our environment.
Visit Brenda today at Plaza Dry Cleaners, 111 South Elliott Road in the Village Plaza Shopping Center. That's Plaza Dry Cleaners, where quality is our specialty.
Hatfield-Barre Hearing Aid Centers present a hearing aid instrument so intelligent, it actually learns your listening needs and habits as you wear it. Here's Jerry Hatfield-Barre to tell you more.
This is Jerry Hatfield-Barre with Hatfield-Barre Hearing Aid Centers, and I'm here to tell you that Infusion technology from Audibel is the biggest advancement in hearing aids in 35 years. I should know, that's how long I've been wearing them. With nanoscience technology, you get unheard of clarity without static, feedback, hissing, and white noise. I speak from experience when I say Infusion from Audibel is a quantum leap in clarity and sound. You have to hear it to believe it. Call me today for a free hearing consultation.
For the latest in hearing aid technology, call Hatfield-Barre Hearing Aid Centers today. They have six locations in the Triangle, one in Chapel Hill at Glen Lennox, and in Durham on Broad Street. Hatfield-Barre Hearing Aid Centers. You'll like what you hear.
Who's Talking with D.C. Martin is brought to you by Crook's Corner, home of Shrimp and Grits, and Bill Smith's Seasoned in the South menu. Join us at 610 West Franklin. Daily menu at crookscorner.com.
Well, welcome back to Crook's Corner. Ron Stutz, speaking of Crook's Corner at 610 West Franklin, we're here. And right now, we're celebrating Elizabeth Spencer Week and celebrating the upcoming broadcast on UNC TV of The Light in the Piazza, the New York musical based on Elizabeth Spencer's novella of the same name. But at Crook's Corner, how can you escape talking to Bill Smith, the chef? And helping me talk to him is Morton Neal, who has, both of these guys have written books that feature Crook's Corner recipes. So we're going to talk a little bit about the food at Crook's. And Morton, let's talk again about this cocktail that you, champagne cocktail. What's your story about this, Bill Smith?
Well, I don't know what you said earlier, but a friend of mine, Andrea Leach, brought me some dried roses from the Middle East and sort of dared me to make food out of them. So I,
except I was the messenger.
You were just.
She was, yeah.
And I had them at my house for about 3 months before I gave them to
Bill.
They're aged.
They are. So what I did was I wrapped them in cheesecloth and buried them in sugar and let them sit for a while. And then I used the sugar to make sorbet with reduced rosé wine, and then we put it in champagne.
Well, and you have accepted the name, the Elizabeth Spencer.
That sounds good to me.
Sounds like
sounds,
a great,
that's a wonderful name, actually.
A great name.
So it was inaugurated on her night. So
I think Andrea would be honored.
Oh, okay, I think so, too. Yeah. That's great, actually. That's a wonderful idea. Yeah.
Morton, tell us about this sort of Bill Smith approach to food preparation, which takes what's available. What's fresh and what's available and turns it to the table and nothing that just is,
Funny
you know, usual.
Ask.
Oh, okay.
I actually, it's not anything new. It's called Cuisine de Marché in France. It's cooking from the market, and it is just the concept, very simple concept with what a lot of folks have always done. You go see what's good and fresh, and you take it home, and you figure out what to do with it once you get home, rather right. than making a list and then going out with a recipe.
So you go to the market without your set list of what you need. You may have an idea of what will be there, but you go to see what is best, and then you come back to the kitchen. And
then you figure out what to do with it.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
start putting it all together. Mm-hmm. But the reason that I was thinking of that today was because I heard Bill talk with Reynolds Price over at the book, celebration of the book at Duke. And I was in the audience, and Bill was there. He was absolutely exhausted, just got off the plane from Mexico, hadn't slept in days. And somebody asked, I don't know whether it was Reynolds, but somebody asked, is writing like creating a meal from the refrigerator? And Bill was kind of, he was kind of dozing off at that time. And he said, oh, I don't know. And I want to say, Bill, you know the answer to that. it's the same kind of creative impulse. You know, there's when you're writing, there's this chaos there, and you start pulling things together out of your mind, your collective unconscious, or whatever it is. Don't you feel?
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
You know, and you sit down and you think, what am I going to write? And then you start just sort of focusing in on these thoughts.
You start to make yourself do it for a minute, yeah.
And
yeah.
then you organize thoughts, and then before you know it, you've got something that is cohesive and hopefully good.
Yeah.
It's the same way with Cuisine de Marché, and Bill is an expert at this. You know, he knows when he sees something, he's got an inspiration, but he might not know exactly what it is, but something starts cooking in his brain, and then
I was thinking about 30 years ago I was in London, and I had this lime pickle, and then about 15 years after that, or maybe 20 years after that, I used it to make sorbet. So it does incubate for a while. I made with passion fruit. Did you ever have that lime pickle passion fruit sorbet?
No. Oh, that sounds divine.
Tell us,
see,
Bill.
See, that's the kind of brain he's got.
Well, but it's like a 15-year lag between the part one and part two.
I'm not sure. You know, we talk about the honeysuckle sorbet and the kinds of things that you make, but I'm not sure everybody knows exactly how you get to a sorbet from a flavor that you – will you give us a little bit of the basics from which you work to create these unusual –
They're all sort of different. It depends on what you start with. If it's fruit, you've got some substance. If it's something like honeysuckle or mint infusion or something, you just have liquid. And so you approach the two different things differently. If it's just a liquid, you actually have to give some attention to the ratio of sugar to water, of sugar to liquid, to make it set up. If it's fruit, every single fruit is different. And you just sort of have to observe. Like mangoes make their own self into sorbet, whereas...
And that's the best sorbet.
Yeah, and then lemon. But lemons are a real trouble.
How do you deal with that trouble?
Well, today I made... I did some strawberry today, and what I did was I knew that I could just toss those in sugar and a pinch of salt and let them sit for an hour or two and then puree them, and then you sort of taste the puree, and you add water until it doesn't taste too sweet, and then it works.
Once you got that mush, what do you do with it then?
It goes into an ice cream maker.
So you just put it in the ice cream maker.
Yeah.
So I could do that.
You could do it.
I probably couldn't, but. Well, now, Morton's introduced us to this Cuisine Marché, or is that?
Cuisine du Marché. Cuisine of the market.
Yeah.
How did you, to talk about what you may be doing in this season, this week,
this
today,
right
that, 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 that follows up on that concept?
Well, let's see what's there. Right now, a good example of that, actually. A good example right now is you've got sugar snaps and snow peas and radishes and all that stuff, the last of the spring vegetables. So what I did was Betsy, who works here, brought me big bags of all these things. And so I just cleaned them up and tossed them with sea salt and olive oil and country ham. And that'll be around this week, and then it'll be gone.
What do you call that dish?
We call it late spring salad or something like that. But it's only here for like a week, you know, so it almost doesn't matter. And next year they'll say, why don't you ever do that thing? And I'll go, what are you talking about? And I will have forgotten what it was. And then that happens all the time. But I might remember.
That's because he's creative. He's on to the next thing.
Now, Paul, my sous chef, will say, no, remember we did this. And I go, oh, yeah, that. And then we might do it again next year. But
So, Bill, is it fair to say if I'm coming to Crook's Corner, one of the things I'm buying is the inspiration that you get about what, not just how well you prepare it, but how well you select it in terms of what is fresh and vibrant right now.
I guess. Yeah, I guess so. Yes, of course. Yeah. I mean, I don't think of it in those terms. I just sort of go out and look and come back. But I don't really plan
now,
it. Yeah.
You and Morton have known each other for a long time. How does this differ, if at all, from the concept that you all developed at La Residence?
That is the concept.
Opened it up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I learned it, actually. I learned it working for
different.
Her there.
It's the same.
Yeah. That's the first place I ever encountered such a thing, although I probably grew up with it sort of without
realizing
it.
Well, then let me ask you, say it's the same, but what's different here? I mean, surely there's got to be some kind of difference but in your personal approach to things and in the time period that's passed and things.
Now you can get anything. I mean, back then, remember, it was like a big deal. To get a fennel bulb, you had to like send to California or whatever.
Oh, listen, you couldn't even get butter. Remember, I would have to drive from Farrington into Fowler's to get a stick of butter.
Unsalted butter, yeah.
Everybody had margarine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You couldn't get a stick of butter in Pittsburgh.
That's true.
They only sell margarine.
And now you can get everything. And you go to the market, like it's open twice a week, and you get all kinds of things. You know, and that certainly was not available. Now we actually have a marché to go to.
Exactly.
Whereas we
tell
didn't
us,
used to.
Tell us about your trip to the market. Are you talking about the Carver Farmers Market?
Uh-huh.
Morton has an interest in that, of course. But
that's right. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about how you approach the market.
Well, first, I have people that I've dealt with for many years, 25 and 30 years, some of them, and so those are the people I go to first. I know by the season what they're liable to have, and
they sort of know what you want.
I mean, it's pretty predictable, really. Nothing weird. You know, just your regular nice things that we get this time of year. I just go and look and. Sometimes I deliver, sometimes I put it on the back of the bicycle, and I have standing orders for some things from people.
Like, give us an illustration of a standing order.
From Kathy Jones at Periwinkle Farm. She's been making sort of an herb salad mix for me for about 10 or 15 years now. I get it every week from her, and it varies all summer long. It's never the same from week to week.
So I can come and get the salad at Crook's, and it'll be a little bit different, but it'll be what? Pretty much based on what she has got fresh from her garden then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she runs it all. She starts in the spring and goes until frost.
So. Now, Morton, is there anything else developing restaurant-wise in this area that is different, that approaches things different, or are they all following Bill Smith's
A lot of them are different. A lot of them rely on big companies to bring volume produce. Some are frozen, of course, because it's easier to control. Most restaurants are not based on this model, but we just are blessed in Chapel Hill to have a lot of them who are, partly because of the strong relationship between the farmers here and the restaurants. I mean, the smart restaurateurs like chefs like Bill cultivate these folks, and they will come to him.
And now they can make a living, too, which is important.
Yeah.
Because it used to be you couldn't make a living doing that. Now Ken Dawson put children through college from his farm.
Well, it's a beautiful symbiosis. And we're a model community for this.
We are,
It's very unusual.
Well, this is really exciting. We are at Crook's Corner. We're sampling some of Bill Smith's great creations, and now we've got a chance to learn a few of his secrets, not all of them, Bill. And we're doing it in the context of honoring and celebrating Elizabeth Spencer on the occasion of the upcoming broadcast on UNC-TV of The Light in the Piazza, the Broadway musical production based on Elizabeth Spencer's wonderful novella. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to have a final word with Elizabeth Spencer after this short break.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
WCHL 1360. Time now for a biography for radio with Jack Perkins. Brought to you locally by the Cedars and East West Partners community.
He was good at picking locks, but his real genius was in designing a machine that delights and annoys billions today. His story next on Biography for Radio.
Do you know your credit score? You should, because staying on top of your credit could help save you thousands of dollars. You can now get your credit score and credit report at freecreditreport.com.
I go online and in seconds, I get my credit report and credit score free.
I can even print it right off my computer.
Staying on top of my credit helped me save a lot of money.
Get your free credit report and score with enrollment in Triple Advantage at freecreditreport.com. That's freecreditreport.com.
His brain was preserved in alcohol for 37 years before it was dissected. Nothing abnormal turned up, surprisingly, since his thinking was a century ahead of its time. The English mathematician was seen as a nutcase back in the 1800s. Fascinated by numbers, he would measure the heartbeat of a pig or calculate odds on a racehorse and carefully record it. He even studied miracles and concluded that the chance of a man rising from the dead was one in a trillion. In 1829, he began work on a machine to calculate mathematical tables. It used chains and clockwork, but a shortage of money left the project in tatters, and the Cambridge professor became the laughingstock of London. He was ridiculed by the press and tormented by neighbors who hired a brass band to play outside his window. When he died in 1871, a single carriage followed his coffin down the street. A century later, his analytical machine is no laughing matter. Its design was the basis for the first ever computer, an ingenious invention of an ingenious mind. It arose from the work of the father of computing, Charles Babbage. For Biography, I'm Lawrence Scott.
Biography is a trademark of A&D.
Biography for Radio, brought to you on WCHL by The Cedars of Chapel Hill and East West Partners Community. The Cedars is the country's premier retirement community. Call 929-1995 to find out more on this very special community. Life has been good to you. Now it gets even better at The Cedars of Chapel Hill.
Who's Talking with D.C. Martin is brought to you by Crook's Corner, home of shrimp and grits, and Bill Smith's Seasoned in the South menu. Join us at 610 West Franklin. Daily menu at crookscorner.com.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. Who's Talking at Crook's Corner. We're live from Crook's Corner, and we're enjoying sampling some of Bill Smith's magnificent creations, including the brand new drink made from champagne and rose petals called the Elizabeth Spencer, and we're honoring Elizabeth Spencer in Chapel Hill this week. We're declaring it to be Elizabeth Spencer Week in recognition of the broadcast this Sunday by UNC-TV and PBS all over the country of The Light in the Piazza, the New York musical production based on Elizabeth Spencer's wonderful novella. Elizabeth, we're so excited for you and with you.
Well, I'm excited to see it even once again, although I've seen it several times in New York. And I think people will find that it's a wonderfully brilliant thing that they've done with it. I mean, full of music and emotion.
Well, it is.
I think music and emotion are the two prevailing words you could use for that production. Of course, saying that I'm the writer is a little misleading because I couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. I couldn't put two notes together. But the fact that it inspired them to write beautiful music is, I think, very satisfying to the person who thought of the story.
Well, that's got to be a great tribute and a great treat to you to know that your work has inspired something which is, although not exactly like what you wrote, takes it to a new level.
Well, it's another version of the story that doesn't change the story. Basically, there's some things they had to leave out and some things they had to treat in a different way because stage performance is different from reading a book. I don't know how else to put it. And
Well, Shannon Ravenel watches Southern writing, and Elizabeth Spencer has got to been...
The pinnacle.
And so you've had a chance to watch this. But Shannon... Elizabeth mentioned about music and the relationship between music and literature and how they intersect, and I noticed that you've chosen stories from time to time for your collection of Southern writing, like Michael Parker's work.
Well, if I did, Gigi, it was purely by accident. I'm like Elizabeth. I cannot carry a tune. I'm totally amusical. I'm married to somebody who plays his guitar every single night, but I don't somehow get music. But Michael Parker's stories are full of popular music, and his novel, his most recent novel, was chock full of it, and I didn't even notice it. Both my children said, "Oh, my God, Mom, the music in that book is so wonderful."
Which one is that, Sean? I'm reading one of them.
If You Want Me to Stay, it's the one about the little boy.
I haven't gotten that one. I've got The Town with No Rivers. This one.
Town with No Rivers has lots of music. Mm-hmm. All of his work has tons of references.
Just getting to know his work. Yeah. Shannon's a great picker. She can find literature.
Well,
most unusual places.
If you dig in all the mines, you can find some of the ore.
It's around.
Well, Shannon, just along those lines, we celebrate new stories from the South, but this year we'll be celebrating it with the new editor. I'm retired.
I'm retiring finally after 20 years, and Kathy Porries at Algonquin is taking it on as a series editor, and she will have a different guest editor each year. And
I think Alan Garganis did it this year.
Right.
I haven't gotten that one yet.
First one is Alan Garganis, and he did a great job. He has a wonderful preface, and he's chosen some fabulous stories. I'm
We're waiting
jealous.
For that
he
to
did,
come out.
Yeah, I think he did better than me.
No, well, we can't say that. He did real well.
You've read them all, have you?
I have read them all, and they're incredible selection. I think that I don't know what to say, but the New Stories from the South is a treasure, and the back volumes are treasures. I go back and read some of the ones that you selected, and they really say different things to me each time I read them. I think about... this wonderful story of Elizabeth that you selected a couple of years ago about the trip of these teacher and the child to the beach and the interconnectedness of family, of sex, of romance, of beach, and all of these things came together. Now, Shannon, what's going on at Algonquin? What have you got that you're pushing?
Algonquin is today very excited because we've just learned that a book of ours, which is a wonderful novel by Sarah Gruen called Water for Elephants, is going to be listed at number 15 on the New York Times bestseller list June 25th. For us, this is major.
Wow. New York Times bestseller.
It's really just the third time we've had a book on the big list, and it means a lot. It really does. So our associate publisher came in and handed me a note hoping that I would say something about this on the radio.
Water for Elephants. It's about the circus. I remember reading about it. It got good reviews.
It's about the circus during the Depression. It's had wonderful reviews, and it's a great book. It really is. It's just a very involving and uplifting book.
Well, we're so proud because Algonquin Books is an important part of the literary tradition in Chapel Hill, as is Elizabeth Spencer, and we're proud to be here at Crook's Corner live celebrating Bill Smith's menu, Elizabeth Spencer's upcoming wonderful day on UNC-TV Sunday night. Let's all watch The Light in the Piazza and celebrate with her. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thanks for joining us. Mm.
Thanks to Crook's Corner and Bill Smith for hosting us. Man, what a day.
And thanks to DG.
Thanks to all y'all for listening. We'll be back same time tomorrow.
Uniquely qualified to cover Carolina. News Talk 1360 WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's News Talk and Tar Heel Station. Chapel Hill Carborough's number one source for breaking